Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Orchestra, and you've probably heard her on one of my past shows in the past, and she is going to be here in Los Angeles. Actually, she's going to be playing this Monday, February 15th, at the Hotel Cafe at 1623 North Coinga Boulevard. You got to check her out again if you're in the LA area. I mean, she does an amazing show. Got to you'll just be amazed. You hear her songs on tape here, but when you hear her live with her orchestra, you'll just be blown away. Like I said, everybody does. It gets addictive. And, of course, this is Andrew Fetter, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. And it's another sunny day. God, we've had some long rains here lately in Los Angeles area, City of Angels. But without further ado, I have a very unique show today, very special show. But I do have a couple of announcements. I know people have been asking me and wondering and sending me information about questions regards to my book. Of course, they're all wondering what happens when you go out of body and astral projection and all that. Well, Spirit is actually technically, unofficially, I don't know how they did it, is released on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but it will be officially released on February 26th. So therefore, that's my official day. You're probably around before that. It's sort of weird how things work. But that's my official date. But I will have a very, very special show on February 24th with many surprises. So do circle February 24th because you're going to want to hear that. Now, also, I just to remind you, next week on February 19th, I do feel highly honored to have an author, investigator, Nick Redfern. He is the author of Contactees, A History of the Alien-Human Interaction, which I think is going to be quite fascinating in itself on the question of extraterrestrials, humans, our civilizations, and whatnot. And I look forward to that. And anyway, I do have a special guest. Because I think, and I asked her personally to hold off. I know I was actually a couple months ago, had an opportunity to read her book, Tapestry of Time, back then. And because of her interest, it falls really quite coincidental, since I guess this Sunday is the day of Valentine's Day. Right. That's well, it's only fitting for my special guest. Now, let me tell you who she is. Joan Newcomb. She is a natural empath. She is a trained clairvoyant and a special spiritual teacher. Her book, which I just mentioned, Tapestry of Time, deals with past lives and present lives. And which we'll very much get into. So without further ado, I feel first very honored to have her. Welcome to our show, Joan Newcomb. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Let me ask you this. I usually start this out because everybody goes, how come you, because you got to get out of the way. Nobody likes to talk about, get too much about themselves. They want to talk about what they want to talk about. But many people, when they first hear of your name or who you are, even as an author, or what you're about, they want to know who you are and a little bit about your background. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. I am, like you mentioned earlier, I'm a natural empath and I'm a trained clairvoyant. And so what that means is I actually went through a clairvoyant training program back when I was 22 years old, and that was 1981, and so I just aged myself here. I went through 5 years of training with the Psychic Institute, and I worked for them for on and off for about 11 years. Went independent in 1994, and so since then have been expanding. What I currently do is, besides write books, is I'm a mystic mentor life coach. I also do intuitive readings. I do psychic readings. And I also do something called matrix energetics, which is a mind-blowing energy technique for transformation. You can't just simply call it healing. It does much more than that, but it creates physical change and change in your life. So there's just a few things that I do besides write books.
So what got you into 22? What made your decision to suddenly get involved with delve into your perspective abilities.
It was a really interesting kind of stumbling upon it. I'd actually always felt my life path was to be an actress. I actually went to London when I was 18 and auditioned for drama school. Actually, I was 17, 18. And I went to drama school for a year there. I went to the same drama school as Colin Firth and who was the last? James Bond. I can see him in my mind. Anyway, those two guys went to the same drama school I went to for a year. Anyway, I ended up coming back to the States. And I ended up moving to Seattle, and I'd had several sort of traumatic things happen along the way. My boyfriend in drama school got hit by a car. My parents divorced, and there was a couple other things there. And by the time I got to Seattle, I decided I was going to take a year off from acting. And instead, 3 days later, I went to a psychic meditation class, and I was hooked. And suddenly my life redirected from being other people on stage to being myself, which is much more challenging.
Wow, so you may have, while doing stage, maybe you've opened up possibly delving into other things, maybe opening up to yourself while you're doing it. Because I know, let me ask you, are you a method actor or what are you...
I would say so. The drama school I went to was the only method school in London at the time, and definitely, you know, the other ones were more likely to put on facades, you know, put on masks, so to speak. So I do more delve into myself. And one of the decisions I made back when I was 22 was realizing at the time I was too emotionally raw. I didn't have the resilience to, you know, handle going out on auditions and things like that. And yet, the tools and techniques that I learned, you know, simple things for grounding and centering, are brilliant things to help you when you're acting, and especially if you're on stage and have to sustain a performance for, you know, a couple hours every night, you know.
Yeah, and auditions are killer.
Yes.
You have to have thick skin. I know.
Yes.
Stuff from... being in the industry, I think the two ones, I think actually the thickest skin are actually dancers personally, because they're treated more of a meat market. And then ones who go auditions for, when they do commercials, is another kind of meat market. You look right, too tall, too small, too short, too thin, too fat, you know, you're not the right color, not like this. And then, you know, and then actors is the same, and then it goes even further. So it's also and who you know and whatnot, so it's pretty weird, you know. It's a weird industry. So anyway, getting to where, so you basically got involved into delving your from all your immediate things that have happened in your past, and then you delved into studying into your school. This was in Seattle, correct? And then you went further on to just kept on going on to your journey through developing your own abilities, or actually more or less, I think we all have our abilities, we're just opening them up toward our abilities. So let me ask you this, because I know, because this is where the meat of your book gets into, and basically the background of what I wanted to discuss with you, which is dealing with the issue of past lives and present lives. And but first, before getting to that, so the understanding is from the very beginning, let me ask you this. What do you perceive is what happens after one dies? You know, you're dead, and then what happens?
I'm happy to answer that. And actually, as a clairvoyant, I've read people's past lives, and I'm happy to cover that. But that actually wasn't in the book. So
no, I know that, but I feel like to develop the understanding of somebody, to have understanding what happens, you know, to when somebody looking at past lives and present lives, my question to you is, what happens when somebody dies? You know, what
okay.
happens to their soul?
Well, so my perspective is that we are spirit and we have physical form. We have a body that we're manifesting for this lifetime. It's our vehicle for being here. It's like our car. But just like you've owned many vehicles, you know, over your life, and, you know, when this one gets trashed, you know, go buy another one. That's what our bodies are like. So we live, we inhabit this body, and then when we leave, we essentially return to ourselves. So it's my experience of what happens when you die has been developing mainly because some years ago I had my first boyfriend died, and have had a tremendous spiritual experience ever since because he's still here. And one of his symbols to let me know that he's around is he keeps showing me silver PT Cruisers, which used to really creep me out because he was riding his bicycle one day and a silver PT Cruiser hit him. So at first it was like showing me symbols of his death, but really he was showing me symbols of his instant joy. Because when you die, you reconnect with your expanded self, the expansion of who you are, and it is
love. Where does your soul leaves your body, so mm-hmm. where does your soul go? That's what I'm asking you. What happens when you die? What happens to your soul?
And I'm trying to give you a different perspective because you are your soul, and when your body dies, you just reconnect with the essence of who you are. You become bigger than you are. It is an expansion experience. So I don't see it as linear steps or anything like that. It's like you leave your body, but you go back into the greater whole of who you are. Now, if you're thinking of progressions into other lifetimes, I actually no longer see it quite that linearly. When I used to read past lives, I would say that each lifetime was a grade in school, and the different experiences that you learned from those lifetimes were different classes that you had. And so right now you have access to all your previous lifetimes, just like you have all access to all your information from when you first picked up a crayon and started writing. You just don't remember that time in kindergarten when you learned to form letters.
So my question then is, what happens when your soul is out in a non-linear, because it is obviously non-linear, because I don't want to get into the finite. When we're discussing that, I'm talking in a broader sense, but when you put it in words, you're definitely finiting issues. But your soul is out of your body in a sense. And then, because your physical body died, and then what happens when your soul, when it re-manifests itself within the fetus, then what happens there? Because you say right there that there's a lock of, some people, in fact, there's an old Kabbalistical story how the reason why we got that little dip underneath our nose is we know everything all about our past lives and present and all about the universe. And when the angel taps you on the nose, underneath your nose to wake you up, and that you're in your fetus, that's when suddenly everything's blocked. So, is that what happens? Is when you manifest within your soul is now inside your feet, then your new fetus that you're in. Is that what you're describing in a sense?
No, I hadn't gone that far back into it, but coming back into physical form, the way I see it is that, okay, as spirit, you know everything. You know, as spirit, you really are the cosmic internet. But your physical form only knows its experiences from the moment it's conceived onward. And so when you're trying to manifest back into a physical form and you're inside a fetus and then, you know, you're a newborn baby and, you know, you can't even roll over, it's really hard to bring all your consciousness through. You've got a lot of clarity and awareness. You just can't speak yet. So you have a different spiritual background. So I don't necessarily see it's a process of forgetting because as spirit you already know. It's more a process of awakening.
I didn't say forgetting. They it's blocked you from knowing what the outside. I mean, technically, if you didn't, you technically your higher self knows so many things, both in present and in the future. If you want to put it in a linear form, that if you did, you wouldn't walk through the experience that are laid forth before you. So there is a purpose in it. It's sort of, I call it, if you want to call it the word blocking or forgetting, so that you have the ability, so you walk through things. As if you knew things were going to happen or you knew things, you would just sit on the couch, so to speak. So that's what that term is used.
Yeah.
So it's not that, it's worth saying the same things just in different ways. It's not from a different spirituality, because all the esoterics talk in the same form, but in different ways. They just use different words or different systems. But basically, I mean, what you're saying is basically, you know, I say it a different way, and everybody else says it seems the same way. But go ahead. Go. The reason why I was getting into a lot of this, because a lot of the listeners, when they hear the backgrounds from different perspectives, they relate to how somebody else might say it as opposed to how I say it, or it's another, depending on their experiences and their viewpoints and their own perspectives.
Uh-huh.
So when you're explaining the point of, that's why I was getting into the what happens when you die and when you're born, because then somebody says, oh, okay, I see what you're talking about, because you relate it to a different way. That's what I was trying to point to.
Yeah.
So, and it's a building block of what we're going to get into, which is what you're about the experience issue and the relationships. So now, so you're saying when your soul, if you want to put in a finite asset, but it really isn't, and you're in your embodiment and that physical form, and you don't really don't know, but go ahead.
I view it from a different perspective, because I don't view myself as my body or my lifetime. You know, I am spirit and I have this body. So one of the interesting things I have noticed over the years and experienced myself, but also noticed with having children and doing readings for different people of different ages, is about the age of 14, bodies get big enough, mature enough that you can get flooded with that expanded awareness. And so, though it comes through on an unconscious level, that's why teenagers feel like they already know everything, because on some level they do, and they suddenly have all that experiences of all the lifetimes they've lived, you know, running countries and being married and stuff, except that you're talking to a 14-year-old who doesn't have a driver's license yet. So we all have access to that information and that expanded awareness. There was something else I was going to say that just evaporated.
What we do, we carry those experiences from lifetime to lifetime, almost like suitcases.
Well, yes, no, and not really, because it's a little bit more like here's a different analogy. Your body is your computer. So if you have a laptop sitting in front of you or a desktop, that's your body, but you are the energy. You are the cosmic internet. You're the information flowing into that. So your body has its own programming. You know, its body has its own hardware, software stuff. But the energy that's flowing in is really you with a capital Y of who you are. And now the other thing is that I have grown to have a nonlinear perspective about past lives and future lives. That really they're all, as spirit, there's no time or space. So it's all happening at once. And the reason why we can't access future lives right now is because the physical form that we're in, it's like trying to access more advanced software. You know, it just doesn't run. You know, older computers can't get some older computers can't even get on the internet. So, see what I mean? So, it becomes confusing trying to explain it in linear form. But if you think of it that everything is all happening at once, and then you even step back from that and realize, We're not really individual lifetimes. We are collective.
Then what's your perspective then on deja vu?
Oh, well, deja vu comes from a different experience. When you go to sleep at night, you go out onto the astral. So really you do kind of connect with the broader self. And on the astral plane, you are experimenting with different futures. And you're also taking classes and workshops. Sometimes you're working out experiences that you can't work out in physical form. And then when you come back in, you bring some memory of that. So when you actually encounter deja vu, you really have tried that out before. You see, it's one of your, you know, the futures that you tried out when you were on the astral.
So you've actually then have a mini experience of future events.
Yes.
So what happens if you were to methodically go out of body as opposed to in dream state? Like if you were to go astral project yourself and go into, as opposed to, because the astral projecting and dreaming is one and the same. It's just one's unconscious and one is more consciously done.
Yeah.
What happens if you consciously do that?
Yes. Well, actually, where we're meandering into actually is into parallel universes. And just as you have had, every time, this is so it gets into quantum physics, sort of, you know, what the bleep and all that. It's whenever you've made a decision to go left, a parallel part of you has split off and gone right. And if you think of all how many millions, billions of times you've done that from the moment you were conceived, you've got that many parallel previous lifetimes behind you. And you have that many parallel futures in front of you. And so it's really a matter of stepping into one or stepping into the other. Not having consciously astral projected, but I can see that doing that, you can, you know, decide which lane on the freeway you want to get into, what parallel future you'd like to touch. But it's all happening simultaneously.
Okay, and then, so let me ask you this, when the experiencing of your past experiences that you've basically, since it's not, it's a matrix of basically, if you're looking at on a, like a computer analogy,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
of all these little chips that you're bringing with you. Now, some people have asked, and this comes into questions of, you know, people always say, God, what was I in my past life? Was I, you know, a Native American, or was I Egyptian, or, you know, and it's sort of funny because I hear people who, and I've done regressions for people, and then some people ask, God, was I a king or a queen? Somebody's got to be the court jester in the surf, you know. You think, was everybody is going to be a king and a queen or a knight or something? Or so it's sort of funny when people look back into what their past lives are. But my question to you, how do you feel about the ethnicity of experiences and also genders? Because I have sort of my theory about when people switch back and forth from experiences from one gender to another and back and forth a lot. But first let me ask you this. How do you feel about the experiences of ethnicity and how they encompass an individual's present life experience?
That's a really interesting question. As you were asking it, I was sort of scanning my experiences, past lives, and also my experiences of reading other people's past lives, and it's never really come to my consciousness. I know I have experienced, you know, an infinite number of previous lifetimes, and so, you know, I've been male, female, and, you know, transsexual, and anything else you want, multisexual, you know, been Egyptian, been, you know, African, been, you know, Asian, white, all those different lifetimes. You know, in an ideal world, if we could acknowledge that we've had those kind of lifetimes, it really should erase prejudice and racism and all those sort of things.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
That's my point.
Yeah, you know.
And then also the switching. I see that. I feel that besides ethnicity, you know, people could have been black, white, green, yellow, whoever, and then you can realize a soul has no face. It's faceless. You know, we're
right.
Basically the mask, like you had just said. And then I have my idea with genders going back and forth. Why there's, you know, people talk about their sexuality. Personally, I feel that there's somebody who's gone, let's say, has been more masculine, a series of masculine lifetimes, and suddenly find themselves in a feminine form. Might be more, let's say, in gay or vice versa, if it's the same. Or if somebody's going back and forth so many times, they may be confused and decided, well, they begin into that transsexual orientation, or they may be more feminine if it's a guy or a girl, more masculine in this lifetime, and they don't know why they're like this. And it might be because that they've carried that, it would be important if they knew a little bit that, hey, you know what, you may have been going back and forth, so they can relate to why they're not, and it's not something ugly or something obscure or something negative. It's just, you know, you've gone, this is your experience that you've been going back and forth, and you just carry that with you, because it seems you carry your personality a lot of times from especially more recent lifetimes, but getting to the gender and ethnicity, I think that also encompasses it.
Yeah, it certainly does explain why, you know, people feel like they're born in the wrong body. I mean, you talk to somebody who's transsexual, and it's like the anguish they've gone through because they feel like they're the wrong gender, you know, and it's like, well, where does that come from? Did they carry that in from a previous lifetime? Now, the other thing that, you know, there are people who are born with both genders, and, you know, and the sad thing is, you know, when you come into physical form here, this planet is all about limitations. And because as essence, we're unlimited, we're expanded, we're totally joyful, and so we've created this world to experience limitations, and so there are these, you know, and we're also to experience the opposite of joy. So we experience hardship and pain and negativity. So you know, it's kind of sad that we have prejudice and limited belief systems, and we have people, you know, unnecessarily experiencing such anguish when, you know, when things just should be accepted. But that's also what this planet is about.
No. What? And then you're saying now, what about you know, delving with? What about personalities? What happens? Do you carry your personalities from one experience? You know, because you know, we all have our certain idiosyncrasies,
right,
that are amplified in our present lifetime that it carried from past lifetime. Is it from past lifetimes that we carry this, or just more recent, or what?
That's a really good question, because I'm thinking about when I had both my kids, and they both popped out as very definite personalities. So you can't really, because I used to say that your personality was what was created after you were born, and it is kind of the sum total of your experiences. So it's sort of nurture versus nature. But the essence of who you are is what comes through. So there's an essence of a personality, and then the idiosyncrasies as well. That's a good point. I don't necessarily feel like we have to carry our baggage or our idiosyncrasies from lifetime to lifetime. That's just the way that people have been doing it. I think we've come to a point where we can transcend karma and things like that. It's just part of, you know, what we bring along the way.
But isn't that part of our individuality?
Yeah. Yeah, though at essence we're not individuals, we're one. But it's part of the flavor of who we are, I guess. Which is a fun thing if you think about it. I mean, that's another aspect of why it's so fun to be here. And even if we have a really challenging lifetime, there's part of us is going, yeah, you know, because we're an expanded, capable being, and so we create really difficult lifetimes and experiences because it's fun. It's like an actor choosing a really difficult part. You know, it's like, how do you pronounce her name? Charlize Theron, you know, choosing to be Monster. And it's like, yeah, when we carry in with a lot of baggage and we have a lifetime that creates a lot of baggage, we're really just up for an Oscar on a spiritual level.
And let me ask you, what about, we're talking just human form, what about, other forms, like is about souls experiencing, you know, alien form?
Well, that's interesting. I was expecting you to talk about animals, because my husband's a Tibetan Buddhist, and so he has a belief system that, you know, you can come back as a dog, or you used to be an elephant, or something like that. And so I was sitting here anticipating you saying that, I was thinking, well, you know, at its essence, we are all spirit, and I capital S. We are consciousness. We are unity. And so as far as aliens go, you know, it's like there are lots of different games out there. And the human game and the Earth planet game is just one of them. And so the alien game, it's just, it's like another different, you know, video game. It's another channel that, you know, you switch to. So at the core, I believe it's all, you know, created by the essence of who we are, which is, you know, not one thing or the other. It's kind of like it's the energy.
So what's your feeling about the term often used for, they call star souls or star seeds, or... that they, people who are not Earth originate. let's say, call it
Well,
that.
You know what? Yeah, I think I actually, I think I briefly mentioned that in my book. Is that, you know, that because back when I was doing past life readings regularly, every once in a while I would look at a gap or a break sometimes in their timeline, or sometimes I would see somebody who didn't have roots, and symbolically when I was looking at roots, it meant that they, you know, came when this planet game originated. And if they didn't have roots, it was that they came from someplace else. So, yeah, I did have a belief system that was that you could come from other forms and, you know, and incarnate into this physical form.
So you could have been a star soul, as some people would term, possibly. Because some people may feel like some people feel more at home on this planet, and others may feel they're not so. They feel almost like
you're just visiting.
Yeah.
You've just woken up one moment morning and someone, you know, threw you down in the middle of Russia, and it's like it's snowing outside and they're all speaking in Russian and the language is written in Cyrillic, and it's like, I don't know where I am. So, yeah, people get born that way and have that experience.
And what you're feeling about the term, some people call them wanderers, like people who are a star or alien originator, star souls, and they're basically dormant souls. They haven't really related to their, that they're not originate. How do you feel about it? And then they suddenly, it's called being, they often term dormant, and all of a sudden they're wanderers, and they suddenly wake up to who they, you know, they are. How is your feeling toward that, from that life, almost like it's that, you know, the lifetimes they may have experienced there on Earth, and they really are originally from another, let's say, extraterrestrial body, and then they're now in this embodiment, and all of a sudden all this information just blows in front of their faces, and they realize who they're supposed to be doing, and now they're on this life-term work, so to speak, to help, you know, in this vortex called Earth. And how do you relate to that as far as what you were talking about re-experiencing the experiences that are coming up? You know, like, do you understand what I'm talking about?
No, not really, but I think it's really interesting what you are talking about, because I haven't really delved into, you know, starseed people but my feeling is that, you know, it's great that they're going into this level of awakening, and that there are those of us who are here as helpers and light bringers, and we're helping consciousness evolve. So that's kind of what I was getting from what you were talking about.
Now, getting back to the issue of souls, I'm sure you've heard the term, and this is because most of my listeners may have heard it, because I've mentioned it before, possibly in the past shows. What's your aspects on the idea of, you know, you've heard of old soul?
Well, we're all old souls. It just, some of us seem more apparent than others. What I keep coming back to is, you know, the essence of who we are, which is infinite, and the essence of who we are, which is eternal, and so it's a step up from that we've had past lives, you know, and you'd say, oh yeah, an old soul is somebody who's had many, many past lives, and you're bringing that awareness in. Well, I'm taking it up a notch and saying we are spirit, and we've had all those lifetimes. And now, if you step back to the, if you keep stepping back, go, you know, higher up into the clouds, experience of being this expanded, infinite consciousness, and you're playing this wonderful game of sending energy into form, and there's different levels of things incarnating into form, and then it becomes this wonderful pattern called planet Earth, but it becomes this wonderful planet called the universe, the planet game called the universe, with lots of planets. It's beyond our comprehension, you know, because we're in these little tiny bodies and little tiny brains. So it's a bigger experience than just, you know, what did one little stream of light experience.
With the, like you just mentioned, what about twin souls?
You know, I was thinking about that because I was thinking in terms of experiences that I've had with my partner and knowing there's were previous lifetimes where clearly I was male, he was female, and things like that. And that, you know, we do have threads. And so you could say, okay, there's a thread of energy with me. There's a thread of energy with that person. And the threads intertwine at different times. And so there are those people who feel like they're twin souls because, you know, at essence they are one. And they feel that more.
I want to get into sort of the issues of which gets into a lot of the meat, a lot of your book, which is interrelationships from which I found fascinating because a lot of people have always dealt with it, and I've had experiences dealing with issues with that for a long time ago. With my past teacher delving into past lives to present lives, but I want to what you're into, because it seems like you work a lot of inner coaching and or counseling, as more correctly. How's your feeling when you deal with people and talking about past lives and present lives? And I assume that, you know, I don't like to use the word assume, but you probably do regressions in your counseling. But their interrelations, some past lives with, in a relationship with their parents and to their children, and how that little circle of, let's say, karmic events, you know, how does that relate? How do you work up those issues? Like, you know, your mom was one time your dad, and vice versa, and you were their parents in the past lives. Can you expand upon the relationship with the karmic relation between our immediate families?
You know, actually, I don't usually get into that in counseling when I'm doing readings, when I'm coaching people. Though I do have a personal experience that I can relate to that. But when I'm doing coaching, I usually work on staying in the present moment and going forward so we don't.
You don't get into any regressions at all or anything
like
that?
No, I don't do that.
Oh, okay. That's my good thing I didn't say assume.
Okay.
Because I thought that maybe perhaps you delved into that. But what's your aspect of your people's past lives as opposed to the present lives? Because sometimes looking into issues, I don't want you to get focused, because I always do when I do, in fact, I did a regression for a group in Vegas. And people are constantly asking me out here in L.A. I first tell them don't get all caught up into their past because you're living your present life.
Right.
But it's sometimes good to know the reason why you're doing certain things now, or some block or something. And if you have an understanding, some issues that you had in the past might make sense now, so they can fix that karmic event. And so my question is you, because the issue usually surrounds, I notice, the karmic inner twistings of souls and dealing with their karmic events with their immediate relationship with their family. Because, you know, there's often the hotbed of family, you know, love, hate, or whatever between parents and siblings and children
I can answer is, I'm going to relate a story of a personal experience that I have, which is my relationship or current non-relationship with my father. And when I came in, I was this, you know, bright shiny being, and when I came into this lifetime, I was just delighted to interact with the being that is currently in the form of my father. However, my father, I was born in 1959, and I was born in Berlin, Germany, and my father had already spent 10 years working as an agent with the CIA, talking people into defecting and things like that. So he was pretty immersed into darkness. And in fact, if anyone had seen that Matt Damon film, The Good Shepherd, that was my dad's boss. So he could not acknowledge the bright, shiny being that I was. He has an interesting storyline of an emotionally abusive family history, which he carried into our family, being a rageaholic and things like that. So anyway, there was a time I years ago now where I was at one of the times he came to visit, and he was rushing to end the meal so that he could show his new wife, you know, a sightseeing place in Seattle, and he was going to leave again and didn't come to visit except every 4 years. And I remember getting this point of acceptance with him that, you know, that we had missed connections and that I was never going to be able to connect with him in this lifetime in this physical form, because I also know that as essence we're already connected. And, you know, when we die, or when he dies, you know, there'll be that reconnection and that acceptance again. It just isn't going to happen here and now with his wonderful, complex storyline. And there's something more I want to say to that. So it's the same thing to do with, like, karma or trying to, you know, all we have to do now is to come into the present moment, and we can drop all of that. If you come into the present moment, you can drop all the karma, and if you're just focused right here in the now, this is your PowerPoint for making choices and in going forward. So there was another important point about my interaction with my dad that I can't remember now. But I have clients who have had, you know, oh, I know what the point I was going to make. It's going back to the analogy of us all being actors in the play called Life. And you have some cast members who play really creepy roles. But the point is when filming stops, you know, everybody goes down to the bar and has a drink. So, you know, Christopher Walken in real life is just kind of a boring guy. You know, he's not really the creep that he plays in all these movies. So same thing with my father. He's not, you know, he's not really this, you know, abusive, manipulative narcissist, which is, he's got an Oscar-worthy role right now. But his physical form, his essence, he's beautiful, pure light. We just don't get to experience that. So, but when we go back into the light, the only thing that exists is love. And so that's the essence of who we are. Do you see what I mean? Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah, I understand you. I'm wondering, because of the issues of karmic events, because I always look at one of the reasons why we're in these embodiments is to learn to grow and to heal ourselves, and part of that is our relationship and developing and working out the issues, like a past karmic. Let's say if somebody did something, you did something issue in a past lifetime, and you come back into this lifetime with, let's say, an issue you meet, whether it's your parent, and with this cousin comes into the karmic essence, and whether it's karma or in Hebrew they call it tikkun, to fix that situation. And the reason why I like the word to fix it, because it's more like you're healing that situation. Because by doing the healing, whether it is actually elevating your vibrational vortex of your energy system, then you would be dealing with that. But when you come into that focus, let's say you come into a circumstance. I always look at it in this lifetime. I had a past a great spiritual teacher, and she used to say that when we come into this life, each lifetime, like in this lifetime, it's almost like a you know, the little color by number painting. And the numbers and everything have already been drawn out. We have our path all literally laid out. We've actually chose our path. We chose our parents and whatnot. And then it's by our action how we color it in. So it's our reaction, how we deal with those issues. Because we've already created our karma event, co-created our karma consequent or meetings, if you so speak, in this personal, this present lifetime. And then it's like, let's say if you were born, let's say, in a very hard area, let's say you're born in an urban, you know, hardcore part of city life, and it's instead you, and you can choose to be, let's say, a gangbanger or go to school. Or you can choose, if you see something very tragic in your life in front of you, how would you deal with it, you know? or if you have an issue with your parents, let's say one parent is very vicious, or you were, let's say, God forbid, molested or raped or something, how do you react toward that? Or in the other sense, you're born with, like Paris Hilton, with a plethora of money and all the everything you have, and how do you utilize that? So basically, it's things laid out before us that we've co-created, and now it's our reaction, how we paint that in those little colors to fill it in, which leads us to the next square, next one, and next one. So that's how she had put it, and I think that in that essence, seems like that's the karmic envelopment of what transcends. And I do think that, you know, we're all of light beings, but out of light, I always say there's dark, because they're symbiotic, because in a relationship. But that's how we would know how to grow from ourselves. That's part of growing and learning to heal. So that would my understanding, and I see within karmic events and in a relationship. So that's what I feel is like really important to understand, the encompassing of past lives, present lives, because it sort of incorporates that understanding with that, because then it gets into those issues of karmic events that you do, with your immediate parent, because there's always some volatility. People have to deal with issues, whether it's your sister, your mom, or dad, or whatever, and their personalities and how you choose to react toward them is how you're going to end up, which creates a new karmic event. And it's whether it's a closing that you've learned to grow from it, or you chose to perpetuate it. Like if you get swallowed up by the hatred of some event, then you've just made that choice as well, that work, that energy creation, because we're sort of like creators, constant creators of energy. Even though we're vortexes of energy, we're constantly creating, which is, in quantum physics, they've already proven that our thoughts are things, as a past teacher one time said. Now I want to get into the meat of things, which is really encompassed in your book, mm-hmm. which deals with issues of soulmates, since it is Valentine's Day. Because I always like to leave the cherry at the end and the dessert at the end here. What can you elaborate upon issues of our soulmates from past life to present life? Because I know you went really into a lot of that into your book.
Well, actually, no. What my book is was about is it takes a regular guy. His name is Paul, and he is living a linear lifetime. So, you know, it starts with him. Just having graduated college, he's got an architect's degree, and he's going for his first job interview. And when he comes out of that interview, he runs into this woman who just totally captivates him, and he manages to being the 70s, he ends up having an amazing weekend with her, and then she disappears. And then 10 years later, when he's a successful architect in Seattle, he starts off in D.C., he's a successful architect in Seattle, he runs into her again, and she doesn't remember who he is, and he's embarrassed. You know, he must have been this wet-behind-the-ears kid, and he didn't have, you know, much of an impression on her. And he actually manages to have a relationship with her that lasts about 3 or 4 weeks, I think, and the day that Mount St. Helens blows, she disappears. And he runs into her again some years later, and every time it has to do with some kind of natural disaster. So the first time in D.C. was Hurricane Andrew going on, I think. I'll give away some of the storyline, because the thing is that he lives within linear time, and she doesn't. She's in human form like he is, but she travels through different sections of time, and she is meant to vibrationally affect surroundings. Now, we all do that anyway, going in linear time. Our energy and our collective energy vibrationally affect our surroundings. But so the reason why, you know, she didn't recognize him the second time was actually because it was the first time she saw him. So there's a lot more intricacies and things like that in the book, but it's not so much a past life thing as these two people have come together. And I'm not even, I hadn't really even put it into soulmates, but I'm sure that if we sat down and talked to Paul, he would describe it that way. As,
yeah, because that's from the POV of in your book. That's how I got it from him, is he
yeah.
looked at her as a soulmate. That's what it seemed like throughout the whole book. That, and it maybe she didn't, well, it maybe it isn't, because that's, like I said, it's such a broad stroking of a word, soulmate.
Right.
But,
you know, if you talked to Maura, it wouldn't have occurred to her to use those terms. But then again, Paul is the only relationship she's had, because in general, the time travelers like her don't have relationships, and it's kind of a no-no. So, if you think the way she's coming at it is from complete purity and clarity and awareness. So, and she's having this amazing experience, love with this man. However, her job, so to speak, pulls her away. Actually, there's a second novel that is in the process of being final edited, and actually a third one that I've got still mostly in my head how she needs to change her energy so that she doesn't cause earthquakes and volcanoes and things like that to stay in physical form. But she can't really stay in one spot for too long a time because it does affect things. So I actually wrote the original draft of this before I learned about quantum physics or any of this stuff was on. So it's really interesting now to be working on that level where I work with people in their morphic fields and things like that and suddenly comprehend, oh, look at that, I wrote about this a while ago. So,
and what do you want to accomplish from your this book, from Tapestry of Time?
Well, there was an aspect of teaching, and it was an aspect of people realizing that they are energetic beings in physical forms. They're not just their bodies, and that we do have an energetic effect on our surroundings. And then another way of looking at it too is that there's clouds of energy, amorphic fields of energy, and you know, are you participating in those different clouds of energy? So why some people miraculously escape certain disasters, you know, they just don't happen to be there because they're not participating, they're not vibrating at that same cloud of energy. So kind of look at how we're contributing our energy in the world is also an important thing.
Well, we're coming to a close here, and I want our listeners to know how they can get in, first of all, in touch with you if they have questions, possibly having some counseling, and also how can they obtain your book.
Simplest, easiest way is to go to my website, joannewcomb.com, joannewcomb.com. It has links to click on to buy the book. It has links about the different services that I offer. I also have a couple radio shows myself, so there's lots of ways to get in touch with me. So it's joannewcomb.com.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on my show. It has been quite enlightening and giving the new perspectives of dealing with issues of past lives to present lives. And with that, thank you very much, and I feel honored to have had you on my show. And I'm going to be closing with Asia by Susan Tony. God bless her soul. And thank you all, and God bless you all, and have an extraordinary, extraordinary weekend. Thank you.